And present now, Jim Cashel, Tony Harbaugh, Bill Dial, Sarah Clurgett, Mary Ann Cuny, Perry Johnson, and Chris Tweeten just stepped out of the room, but he'll be back.
Truman's coming back.
Truman will be back. Okay.
If not, we're going to auction off his iPad. Okay. So I think when we left off, we were at 2313202, which we just deleted. And that was, again, a little bit of a Wadsworth amendment to clarify. We changed it in 201 and clarified it in some other places. But the bottom line is that everybody is required to follow the current ethics code and everything else that Post comes up with. Okay, the code of ethics. These are the changes that we've made sort of throughout the history of this. You'll notice this is all to the, all of the changes are to the beginning section. For the most part, the code itself, or the oath, I guess I should say, itself, we haven't really changed. If you guys want to take a minute and let's go over that. The addition of 3 was another place that we put in the another amendment to say everybody's bound by this. The comment on 3 came from Chief Marvel again. Can you guys read that? Yes. And he wanted to see shall change to may.
He's exactly right, I think.
Well, yeah, I think it won't hurt anything to do it.
I like it that way.
Shall means if you don't do it, this is what happens. Well, may means it could happen, but it doesn't happen.
We have the discretion built in elsewhere, yeah. So I don't think it really makes a difference. But if it's one of those things that save ourselves the argument and just change it to may. So that was that highlighted change because that comment came in after the last December meeting.
Well, and it gives you the discretion, too, if technical violations may occur.
Right.
Does one instance of acting discourteously constitute grounds to...
Absolutely. We take away licenses for that at all.
Right. Yeah. But that's the point. If it's a shall, then you're sort of obligated to put some sanction on the license if they, for one, an act of discourteousness or irresponsibility, and I'm not sure you want to be in that position.
So this other, Chief Marvel had a similar comment for subsection B here. And again, this is not a change. We haven't changed the actual oath itself at all. He was concerned about the use of shall in this subsection. While I can agree with the first change, I'm less convinced by the second change, but I will defer to the experts.
I responded, this came to me in an email, and to be real honest with you, I was probably real blunt in my response in that I don't think that we have ever sanctioned somebody, ever, because they were rude. And I'm not worried about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's an administration issue. It's not a post-company issue. And for him to suggest that we're going to become punitive or petty about this stuff, this is the model of the behavior in the Code of Ethics is the model that you want your officers to have. You know, that doesn't mean they can't be human. Sometimes, you know, we are going to say something that we wish we had. But that's not a post issue. That's his issue. So
I would change shall to will, just to make it consistent with the rest of it.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. It says I will enforce or imply it. I will never allow. I will treat. You know, I try to change shall to will.
You don't like endeavor?
So that was the only, those were the only changes to the code of ethics. Is everybody okay with that?
Hold on, let me see.
Read these faster.
Oh, sorry. If you want to read the whole thing, I'll slow down. I was skimming.
H, the way it's worded, it's kind of clumsy. It will take responsible opportunities to improve my level of knowledge. So that was written up.
Reasonable.
Yeah, this, we haven't changed the actual oath itself at all. It remains the same. But that doesn't mean we can't change it. We can change whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my guys all the time, I say, you're your best career manager. That's what I get out of that.
Would it be the steps or something like that? Take reasonable steps to improve?
Yeah.
Or take, oh yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking take advantage of opportunities to improve, but reasonable steps to improve and stuff.
Sure.
Okay. Moving on. All right. This rule was pretty much intact from what it was originally. We changed a few things. But the only main substantive change was the preponderance of the evidence standard that we added in subsection 3.
Good.
And that was, I don't even remember, honestly, how far back that was, because that was many drafts ago.
I think we had a conversation that time about whether this is the right place to put that standard.
Yeah, well, we have them in two places now.
Mm-hmm.
We have this one here, and then we have another one when we get
to. I'm going to clean it up here. Okay.
Everybody okay with that one?
Well, just...
And again, all of these changes are old. With the exception of that highlighted section. And Chris, I originally, before this draft, I went through and made sure all of the section references were right. Now that we've messed with it again.
Yeah, we got to go back and cross-check all of them.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a good task for your paralegal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
After I get the first draft of the two-unit notice format. What am I looking for here?
Everybody okay with that one?
Under B, acceptability of 3-hour plan for training shall be determined by the council. You guys are never going to see those applications for course credit or transcript. Guys are.
Should that say the director then?
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Well, it's still by the council. It's still going to be the council. And whether or not we delegate that is the issue.
Okay.
I mean, it's when push comes to shove, it all falls on the council.
Determined by the council and enforced by the director, or
the council's where the buck stops, right?
Well, I'm good with
just leave it the way it is.
Okay. Council and its agent. Our minion.
I've never seen one.
Oh,
you!
Oh, man, it is wonderful.
They're great movies.
Yeah.
They're so
oh,
such great
come
movies.
On.
No,
they're great. They're great.
Why are
Despicable Me.
Don't feel bad, Tony. I don't get in that stuff.
All right, focus.
Give yourself a chance. You might like it.
All right. again, all of these are old changes, but just make sure we're all on the same page here.
So by taking out triple I, we are now going to issue automatically the basic certificate after
yes.
1 year.
I think it comes, I think it's down here at the bottom here.
Okay. I didn't mean to jump the gun, but.
Okay, so there won't be any administrator signing off on that.
On the basic certificate.
Right. Because there won't be an application.
Right. It will automatically generate from here.
Okay.
Is that everybody's clear that that was...
Well, that's not entirely true.
So you can have like a tickler system? Or how are you going to do that?
Yeah, I think that is what we're going to have to do.
Really?
And he'll
what? A tickler system.
On your Outlook, was
yeah.
how originally. But it's not entirely true that you're not getting a sign-off, because you get a sign-off from the agency saying that they've done the background check in the book and all that stuff.
Are we creating a situation where we may not be aware of that officer's cessation of employment?
Well, that,
yeah, we are.
What if there's a reason that shouldn't be issued?
That's what I was going to say, Perry, is because I've had a couple instances where I've not put them in for their certificate based upon the chief's conversation with me because of, you know, delaying it, and he said, no, that maybe next council, and then I'm taking it before the council, the city council the next time. Because that's how it is in Missoula, that he takes them before the city council and that, and they get them confirmed after that year. But that year is based upon his own timetable. I mean, I have it on my calendar, and okay, they've been employed a year. Ask chief, hey, are we good for this one? And, you know, normally he tells me yes or no, and if it's no, he says, no, we're going to wait another month. That because of whatever.
Yeah, because we've extended them 6 months.
Perry, this was put in place before you. So maybe imposing things on you that you are less comfortable with than other folks were. But the original plan was that we would set up the tickler system based on the outlook, the tools we have right now. The goal eventually would be to have database generate the announcement. But for now, Outlook, and then at the time the Outlook tickler came up, to send an email or make a phone call to the administrator and have them confirm, first of all, that they've met all the requirements that they're supposed to meet for their probationary period, that they've done that accordingly. And then if that's met, then issue it automatically.
I think that would be a good idea.
Is that in here?
No, we didn't put it in the ARM
on
purpose
yeah.
because we didn't want to create a process in the ARM that could be changed later as we get better technology.
That should be an office policy, I think.
Yeah.
Because it says if he's met the qualifications, okay, how do we verify the qualifications? So verify the qualifications about 3 weeks beforehand. You send an email to the administrator, so such and such and so and so is due to have a certificate issued. Is there any reason why you shouldn't?
I think that you're simplifying this way too much.
That's going to be
there's going to be hundreds of emails every year. And if you think that an email is going to get a response, doesn't work that way.
You know what? Then shame on that administrator.
Well, then does he not get a certificate?
No. Then we get the certificate.
Yeah, I'm liking this. I'm quick with
this. I think the point was he does get the certificate because you don't hear about. We want to have the certificate. The point of this was to everybody to have a certificate.
Yeah, but at the same point, we're not going to spoon feed people.
No.
So if you send it out and say if we don't hear from you, we assume that you do approve or it's
no response, we will generate the certificate.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's
appropriate.
That's just
that gives the monkey off your shoulder.
Yeah, but I mean, if you got somebody they want to extend and they don't tell you,
And the goal, there was a lot of conversation originally about the database and IT being used to create this automatically.
IT.
I know.
How in the hell can they do that? I'm sorry.
Well, the the point was that the database should be able to create a tickler and generate an automatic email that can do this for us, but we didn't want to put, that's why we didn't want to memorialize anything in there until we could get some technology updated.
Are you okay with the idea of respond or it comes out?
Yeah, because I'm still going to keep track of everybody.
Sure.
But in the agencies that don't, I think that's about the most workable method.
Well, I think so, and that, just like you said, Nat, because, you know, you send an email, and it should, it, in all reality, it should be the month before, because the month that you meet, you know, maybe stuff is supposed to be on the first of the month, and that, so.
Yeah,
months
or something.
As one of my captains saying that, let people, you know, pull up their big boy pants and be responsible.
Well, the statute doesn't give Post any discretion in terms of if they aren't fired during their probationary period, during the first year of their probationary period, they get a certificate.
SARM says that, right?
I thought we could extend them.
The statute says shall issue.
Yeah, a peace officer who successfully met the employment standards and qualifications and the educational requirements of this section, so they've done all their training, and who has completed a one-year probationary term of employment must, upon application, be issued a basic certificate.
No, that's 732.303.
It is. 303
yes, sub-7. And that was what we fixed, was that it's the language of this is that we will assume that meeting the requirement qualifies as an application.
I thought there was some in the statute, so we could extend them.
Post can extend their basic training. My understanding from my HR people was that you can't extend probation. But that was a local standard that was imposed on my office. I either had to make a decision at that point of his 1 year, or they were off probation. They would not allow us to extend it anymore. And that was a MACO thing. MACO said, you can't do that.
Well, there was a lawsuit out of Gallatin County that screwed that all up. Yeah. You can extend probation if you have reason to do it. But we screwed it up so badly that, you know, it went to court and they just said, we ain't going to fight anymore, huh?
Who was the sheriff then?
Slaughter.
Me. I mean, you could. I was just wondering. You know, 1 year probation, so is that 365 days?
Well, there's a provision in here that says what 1 year means, and I can go back and look at it.
And the reason I say that, because what if a person in that, you know, I know for myself, within my first year, I took 2 weeks unpaid and had to go back to Indiana to be with my dad before he passed away.
Yeah.
And so. Mm-hmm. That could have extended it past my hire date from 1 year.
Yeah, there's a lot of things, I guess.
I'm laughing because we get those notice of appointments, and it was 2011 that they were hired. Okay, well, that's nice. Now, how are we supposed to run herd on that one? You know, perfect world if we have Mr. Poster Boy here that takes care of everything very diligently, but then we have...
Well, and it really, that sounds like, well, that's not a big deal. But then you've got that officer attending training during those 2 years, sending in rosters. And we don't even have the guy in the database. He isn't getting any credit. And then 2 years from now, he's calling up and saying, hey, how come I don't have credit for that 40-hour instructor development?
Well, I'm trying to hunt him down, but...
And that was the other reason we worked on this ARM, was to give you guys a tool so that... Once that area is in place and you find those people who are qualified, because they will inevitably trickle in as you find the training, and then, okay, we're getting a hire slip from you, we've never seen you before. All right, let's talk. Do you meet the basic requirements? Yes. Then we're going to issue you a basic certificate that you don't have to apply or anything. We're just going to issue it to you. Point being, then...
Without documentation?
Pardon?
Without documentation?
Well, that's what I mean. You have to communicate with whoever. But the point is, as you find them, as they sort of come up, which they do a lot, is to just say, all right, have agency, have they met all the qualifications? Boom, you're done. Don't apply. Don't ask them to apply. Because what was happening was we would ask the agency to send in an application, which would never happen. And then we'd know that they were out there, but we can't do anything until they apply. So that was why we changed the statute to say, if you've met the qualifications, we're considering that.
When some of those applications can, some of the low qualifications can be completion of FTO program,
yeah.
And right. The one-year requirement. And most of these guys, there's a pay raise associated with that first year, so they're going to be paying attention to it. I would think that that your system sends just sends a message and says, so-and-so is eligible for his, you know, has he met the local requirements? We will consider no response as an affirmative response. And,
I think if you recall that, what some of this stemmed from in that was that trooper that was killed.
Yes, meeting the requirement for the insurance.
And in order to get the benefits, and that had to have a post certificate. Well, he didn't have it, but he was granted one.
Yeah.
And that posthumously, and you know, he met all the requirements and everything.
Yeah.
But nobody ever applied.
But no one,
right.
But no one applied.
Right.
Yeah, Truman, the answer to your question of 1 year says, unless the context otherwise requires otherwise, the following definitions apply. Year means a calendar year.
So 365.
So unless, well, it means a calendar year. It could mean 366 days a year.
Right.
But it means a calendar year. So date to date, basically.
Well, no, we're in, don't leave 206. I want to go to...
You're going to come up with something profound, I can tell.
Yeah.
I love that one, Tiffany.
God, you flatter me. I feel like I'm in a bubble here. So C, under 206C, that's officers without a state experience, training formerly employed by a fed, state, tribal, county, municipality, city, or town. Who did that? Who do not have basic certification are employed by a Montana law enforcement and a public safety officer. Bill Dye, came here from Illinois. He shall complete the probationary period. Let's see. And he, whose training and service time is determined as by the council as equivalent and must successfully complete an equivalency program. The way it is now, you guys, at every meeting, you get a report from me, and I say, hey, Brad Beisch has this guy from Minnesota, and he wants equivalency. I don't see any place in these ARMs that says that I have to present that to the council. It just says that they have to attend.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's been done maybe as a matter of practice, but I don't know if it's required. Yeah.
Now, the reason I'm asking is because the DOC has hired an investigator, and they will be public safety officer. They'll do investigations, and there'll be some kind of agreement with Powell County to be able to work crimes at the prison. But apparently, there's some kind of restriction placed on their investigators by DCI that says until they attend legal equivalency, they can't act in that official capacity. So here's why it's coming up now. Since our last meeting, actually 2 days before our last telephone meeting, I had received an application to consider for equivalency. And 2 days before the meeting isn't time to put it into an agenda or on the agenda or in the packet. It didn't go in. So they're asking me now, well, can you give some kind of conditional approval?
So that they can schedule.
So this person can get in because it starts April 7th. And while I was looking for it, I told the guy, I said, I don't know if I can even do that. Let me check. And I don't see the protocol or the rule that says
requirement.
The council passes them in there. They just say, you must attend this equivalency that we have determined.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
That is determined to be approved by the council and administered by the academy. So we've got the course approved by the council. We do that twice a year, April and October.
We have to approve extensions.
Okay, first of all, what you're going to do What you're doing is you're granting a basic certificate to that person when they complete the equivalency, right?
No, it's got to have a year.
Okay, but it's the basic certificate, right?
That's all they'll get.
Okay, now, does the law require the council to approve basic certificates?
You know, actually, Sarah's going to shake her head and say it does not. The director issues the certificate.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another part of our protocol. Every meeting, this last one, 191 certificates presented to you guys. When the ARMs that we're going to work our way through right now says that the director will issue them.
And that's on everything, intermediate, supervisory, everything. Huh?
Help me out here, Sarah.
Yeah, it's, I can, do you want me to find them right now, Perry?
I think it's everything but
extensions.
But extensions,
yeah.
That he could effectively rule on in our.
And Alan asked me the same question when he got on board, and I said, "It's historically that's how we've done it, so do it the same way all the way through." And I think he told Perry the same thing. But I agree. Perry asked me this question. I agree. In all of our ARMs, I think it's like the director.
I think.
Perry, my thought on it would be, especially because of the time issues involved in the scheduling of meetings versus the scheduling of things such as the equivalency training, that you should be able to approve those as well as any other certifications, and maybe as a courtesy still continue to print that or show the council, you know, what action, what people have gone through as far as receiving this or receiving that. But I don't know that we need to take council action on anything but the extension.
Well, Mary Ann just read to me, and it helped me out a lot, and she just corrected me. She said, look at C2, whose training and service time is determined by the council. It is you guys that determine that.
Well, and that's what 303 sub 7 says. Peace officer shall be issued a certificate by the council.
And if
the council, but you know,
if we designate,
if the council delegates that responsibility to the director, that's something that's completely permissible.
But see, if we were going to do that, my recommendation would be, okay, we would say, as a council, okay, officially adopt a policy that says, in situations where there are extenuating circumstances or tight time constraints, mm-hmm. and the director has evaluated everything, that he has the authority to do so, and that decision will be brought before the council at the next meeting.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm sitting in your chair, Perry, I want the official okie dokie from the council every opportunity I get.
Well, and I agree. I think that's because that is just the real world. You know, things are going to happen, and some people are going to say, "Hey, can you help me with this?" And I'd rather try to work through it with them than say, "Ah, you know, there's a rule for that, and you're just not going to get a consideration from me." So I'm going to say to you guys that situation that I just described, I'm going to respond back to the DOC and say, you have conditional authority, or you have conditional approval
permission,
and you can spend your training dollars, you know, spend your time sending that person, but the council will actually have ultimate review of that.
Right.
Yeah. If that's okay with you.
Well, I think you need to.
Absolutely.
Okay. While we're on,
otherwise people will think that your decision is final.
While we're on equivalency, whatever happened, I know when I took the equivalency in 01, we had to take the PT test. Whatever happened to that? So, I mean, some guy that weighs 500 pounds from Alaska can come in and without passing the MCAT test. How does that work?
Yeah, they don't do it anymore.
Why?
It's only required at the basic level.
And that
employment standard.
Yeah, I was going to say that goes back to that discussion that we had a while ago about continuing employment standards, and that somebody came to one of the meetings and talked about whether it was a problem that their officer couldn't pass it, physical. Do you remember this?
Yeah, out of Carter County.
Carter County, we denied it. Well, we couldn't deny it because we didn't have the authority to do it. That's right.
Right.
So we, yeah.
But it was that same conversation about...
He didn't issue it, but he still worked.
It's something that the hiring department can certainly take into consideration in terms of suitability for the job. But, you know, but I'll tell you, obesity is on its way to becoming a protected class. And you need to show some job-related reason why it prohibited the person from and if that's going to be a motorized patrol officer and is rarely, if ever, going to be required to run down suspects,
and
maybe it's not a job-related.
When they did the MCAT, they took all that and they, you know, they, I guess, evaluated what an officer's minimum standards have to be, and you know, that's
job related.
All job related. So I think that would stand muster for obesity, but it just kind of seems interesting. If a guy, say, a person could come in from, you know, where I came from, Illinois, and be on disability from that place and still be an officer here. It's not a big deal. I just want to run away.
Yeah, but that's subject to the control of the employing agency, too, as to whether they want to hire or not.
Except the day he tips over dead and his wife sues the city because they never should have hired him in the first place.
Yeah, right. Well, you can get sued either way, and for not hiring him, for hiring him, I suppose.
Can I ask a question about these guys at the prison? Are they cops that are being hired to come to work in the prison or correctional officers that are being hired as investigators?
No, I think this is not a state officer. I think in this particular case, this might be an officer that's actually retired, somebody with an extensive career already.
That's going to have some basic credentials and some credentials.
Right. They're post-certified, I think, in another state. I haven't looked at it closely enough because I wanted to have this discussion before I even got into it.
Well, because, okay, in my mind, if they hired a correctional officer and said, we're going to make a criminal investigator out of you,
he's got to go to
basic. I'm going to go to basic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Perry, I was having this footnote in my brain about having had this conversation with the council before about the application, or about the who approves the certificate,
mm-hmm.
And I finally found it. The context that we talked about it in was these other, this section in subsection 2 here.
Yeah.
And that's under the intermediate certificate, and it's in intermediate advanced. Command, they're in all of them, and that was when we had the discussion about who was going to approve and when, and this was the language that we put in for those certificates to set it up so that the director makes the decision, and then it will be reviewed, it becomes valid as soon as the director does it, and then if there's any problem, it comes up before the council, and we had a big conversation
that
about
that. Came out of discussion with pay increments being based on it, having to wait if it didn't get approved right away.
Yeah, and we were talking about the review process. We had a long discussion about the review process for certificates that were denied and how we were going to deal with that, and this was how we solved it. But we specifically accepted the basic from this setup because the council wanted to see the basic list. More than they wanted to see intermediate, advanced, command, blah, blah, blah.
So what is this under, Sarah? Is
this is under
intermediate,
which is...
207?
Hang on. It is in, 207.
Okay.
So the question is, we can put language like this back in the basic certificate as well to make it clearer. But the point, we were trying to balance the concerns between the approval of the certificate and the automatic issuance of the certificate by the director and all like that. So just for background purposes, that was why the basic certificate is different than all of the other certificates, which are much more clearly stated. The director reviews it, and it's reviewed by the council only if there's an issue.
Okay, so now what are we ready to move into this then?
Well, my question was, do you want me to... We can cut and paste this language into the basic certificate.
I like the way the basic is.
I think the council.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're good.
Okay. So, just in regards to this subsection 2, then, are we good with that?
For the other certificates.
Yeah, as they come in, we would process them, and you would only see the finished results during your council meeting. Mm-hmm. These are the certificates that have been issued during this.
Right.
Sure.
And as it says, you know, if you have...
If you have questions on when
you have an issue with any of it, then you bring it to the council, too.
Okay.
But this only takes effect once the new ARM takes effect.
Right. So under the under subsection 1, I just want you guys to work through this with me. Shall possess the discipline-specific basic certificate. We've been doing this. Some guys don't apply, and I think, I can't remember who asked the question during our last meeting. Hey, this guy, Jim Thomas did. This guy applied for a basic and an intermediate at the same time. And what that says is, in order to get the intermediate, they shall possess the discipline-specific. But here's the problem, and I'm not saying this is a problem, but in regards to especially guys like Bill Dial, he comes out here from out of state, he's got 30 years experience, we're going to make him apply for basic, and then we're going to make him apply for an intermediate, because he's got to have those. That the next one's going to say the same thing. And historically, this is what has happened. A guy like Bill Dial comes in, he fills out one application, gets his certificates. And during our last meeting, we issued basics and intermediates at the same time. And it's not just the last meeting. We've done that historically. So are you guys okay with that?
Yeah. You know, in my mind, if you look at each application and you do the calculations and you look at it and you note what exceptions and different things are there and you bring it to the council and say, hey, here's a guy, he fell behind, he didn't, or his agency didn't do it, or whatever the case may be, he needs to apply for this, 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 and this, and I think he should be able to do it. You guys approve it. I'm going to approve it.
Okay. See, I think that it should, too. That's just what I think. But
Well, and the point is that now, if he has the basic, Harry could do all of that without having to come to the council.
Unless he finds something.
Unless there's some extenuating circumstance.
Okay, so are you there? Okay, now we're going to go into C then. Because here's what I see. I see Jim Cashel hires Perry Johnson, who works 6 years in his detention facility. Then he decides he wants to be a deputy sheriff. So he becomes a deputy sheriff. He goes through basic. A year later, he applies for an intermediate. Because it says you shall have 4 years experience and 200 job related post training hours. Here's how Horsfall applied. He doesn't care how many hours or how many years you had in detention. When you started as a peace officer, your clock started again. That 4 years experience has to be specific to your, just like it says above.
To refer back to B.
Discipline specific basic. So if he's got a basic in, I guess here would make it a brighter line for you, maybe, Tony. He gets hired as a deputy, and then his first
then
month he applies for an intermediate
because
he's got 4 years or 6 years experience.
Not the 6 years detention experience.
No, that's my point.
No, you can't mix them.
The language that's coming up there now and it is probably what needs to be added.
Job related. Now, here's the other part, Sarah, that I'll say this. Horsfall said, I'll give him credit for those 200 hours as a detention officer or dispatcher because it's pretty easy to take your teaching experience and put it into that mobile data terminal. You can do that. It's pretty easy to take that crisis response on the telephone and apply it to, hey, you know, put the knife down. You don't want to hurt yourself. You know, and I kind of agree with Horsfall with that. You won't keep your time, but you'll keep your training hours, and you can build on that.
Just like any other type of course, you could show that related to.
Yeah, I follow that.
I don't want to muddy the water here, but turn that around. The guy's a deputy sheriff and has been forever, and decides he wants to go to work as a detention officer. Have to go to detention officer basic.
Well, my position on that would be no.
I agree.
And the reason that I say that And it might not be very good. And I know what Jim's going to say is because that's a completely different discipline. There's different protocols that you need to apply to that. However, the way that I look at it is those guys go to a detention basic for 4 weeks. These peace officers go for 12 weeks, and not only do they deal with detained people, they're the first step in that detention. And I open the floor to you.
I didn't mean to take us off on a tangent, but
I like this discussion.
I think it is something that you could be faced with. In fact, I think you have been faced with it.
No, I faced it. Okay? I had all kinds of law enforcement certificates. I took over the jail.
Yeah.
Okay? I didn't know beans about jail.
Yeah.
Okay? So I went to Detention Officer Basic.
Yeah.
I made everybody that came over there go to Detention Officer Basic. We always did because it's two different worlds. Yeah. You're not learning about running a jail or working in a jail when you're working outside. They're two different things. They're two different areas of responsibility. And I think that you keep them separate the way we have them now.
See, I guess the way I looked at it is I started out with an agency as a deputy sheriff, and I was a detention officer because I didn't have one. I booked, I passed meals, I crushed meds, I transported to court, I rebooked, I released, I did all of that stuff. And there's a lot of agencies, and I'm not saying everybody is like that, but there's still a lot of agencies that do that. They don't have a detention staff. You know, at 5 o'clock, when everybody locks the doors, there's a dispatcher or a deputy that looks at a camera or listens to the audio or whatever. And it's not a great situation. I'm not saying that that's the preferred thing, but there's a lot of agencies that do that. And so at the end of the year, there's some agencies that sent their deputies through Detention Officer Basic, and they were never detention officers, but they thought they had to. Because they were deputy sheriffs and they were working in the jail sometimes. They were doing exactly what I did. And my position is no, you don't have to go through detention officers.
So if a guy comes here from another state and he's got 20 years experience in detention,
yeah.
He has a Detention Officer's Basic from that state, and he has absolutely no training or experience other than anything, he worked night shift the entire time he was at the jail.
Yeah.
And he wants to come to work as a deputy sheriff.
Got
to
go through basic.
Okay, why is that any different than the other way?
Well, because if his basic is the same as it is in Montana, he's short.
But see, the sworn training teaches you how to act out here. Detention training has how to act in there. That's just, you know, that's my preference. I think they're two different worlds.
Is there a statute that says that detention officers have to go to basic?
Yes.
Because that, I think, may answer this question. Because if there's a statute saying that they have to go to a specific detention officer basic, then we can't go around that. And that's what I'm trying to find. I just don't know where it is. If anybody can help me. I would assume it would be in the 44s, but I can't find it.
You looking it up here on your computer there?
This is my computer. Not only did I build a little cheat sheet, I built a little cheat book.
Do you want coffee?
No.
Harry, you want coffee?
Sure.
Because my thought being, if there is a statute, like for peace officers, there is a statute saying you have to go to basic. So if there's a statute saying as a detention officer you have to go to detention officer basic, then we can't get around that. Do you know what I mean?
You have to go to Detention Officer Basic and you only have a 6-month. No, we changed that to a year. There is a specific statute. I can't remember which one it is.
Okay.
Well, though, it's always going to come back to this. If I don't have a detention officer, my deputy sheriff is it. And I ain't sending him to Detention Basic to book a guy into jail that he just arrested.
And
I'm not going to take him
off
the street.
And there are a lot of agencies yet doing just that.
I know.
And the question came up to me recently, which is why I brought this up, from an agency that has no detention officers, that says, can we seek a detention certificate for our sworn officers? And I said, I can't answer that.
For a detention basis,
you should be able to. Yeah.
I see. I think they can if they send them to detention basic.
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
But if they just send them to peace officers, law enforcement basic, they're going to get a detention basic certificate for that. But I don't think it precludes them from booking a prisoner. Or taking the guy out of jail.
I don't either, because it's part of their duties as a sworn officer.
Nobody's saying it does. We're talking about certification.
Yeah.
What are you going to? What credit do you going to give them for certification?
Yeah, do you certify them as a detention officer basic or as a...
Only if they take the basic.
Okay.
Right.
I think we're all in agreement then on it. That in order to get the certificate, you have to attend.
If that guy wants
basic.
To go full-time in...
You can perform the duties. You can perform the duties and not have a basic certificate if performing those duties is part of your duties as a sworn officer.
Right.
Would everyone agree with that?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now, there's guys out there that have both those certificates because they attended both of those.
Yes. Yes, there are.
But then the question, to get us back to what we were talking about here.
I know one better watch and monitor.
Right.
Your training... And your job-related or discipline-specific training, how much do those cross-count for your intermediate certificate? So we're not talking about basic now. We're talking about intermediate.
Well, the onus is on the officer who's applying for it. If they can say, I took, 100 hours of course X, and this is why the flies for my law enforcement intermediate certificate, then God bless them. We can't set, I don't think we can set a standard that delineates exactly what he's for. That's his job. And if a guy can send a memo to him saying this is why it relates, then I think he's all right.
Here's where these things are going to start to go together.
Yeah.
Okay? When you start going to intermediate training, advanced training, command training, things like that, now you're getting into the world of, okay, I'm going to be a shift supervisor, I'm going to be a commander, I'm going to be an administrator. Okay, what am I going to learn there? I'm going to learn those traits that work at both worlds at that point in time. Now it starts to go together.
So we're okay with, so originally I had discipline-specific job-related training. I had discipline-specific in both areas. 4 years discipline-specific experience and 200 discipline-specific job-related post-training hours. So I took out the discipline-specific in the second. And it sounds like we're okay with that, because as long as you can articulate that they're job-related, we don't need them to be
disciplined. Yeah, the job is no longer a detention officer. The job is, I'm a sergeant, I'm a lieutenant, I'm a shift supervisor, I'm something other than that. And then the additional training that comes with the world you're functioning in, that's up to the entity you're dealing with.
So here's what Sarah's point is here is that guy, when Perry quits being a detention officer, he's got 400 hours of detention officer for training as that detention officer, gets hired as that deputy sheriff. Now he's going to, before he's qualified for an intermediate certificate as a deputy sheriff or a police officer, he's got to have 4 years experience on the street as that.
That would make sense to me.
And then 200 job-related post-training hours.
Right.
And those could be, just like what Bill said, all of them might count. If that guy can demonstrate to a couple of sentences, hey, this 24 hours here when I was taking...
resolution.
Yeah, right. I'm really getting an advantage out of that. So we're okay with job-related then. Okay.
Okay. So I think we're done with that, right?
Yes.
Now, the good news is that subsection 2 is on pretty much everything.
Wait a minute now. Okay, now we're in B again. 8 years job-related or discipline-specific experience.
Do we say post-training hours or post certifiable or certified?
Well,
or is
approved.
Is that
post
approved training hours?
We'll apply those 400 hours. You mean we will use their explanation on their military hours? We'll use their explanation on their college transcript. We'll use
post credit.
Yeah. We put those on their transcript when we.
once you approve as far as sorting out what qualifies and what doesn't.
Right.
Well, they have to, they should be submitting and have that breakdown that, okay, this is general knowledge, this is leadership, this is traffic, this is...
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and we break that down because, boy, you know, sometimes they, it looks like especially the Highway Patrol, it looks like they've got all this crash stuff and you want to put it all under traffic. Well, some of that technical stuff is really like
I mean, it's more like investigation.
Well, it can be, or it could be more like a specialty, you know. So there's things, there's ways for me to move around that,
sure.
or move it around and get them into those certificates. And if they submit it, I get it all the time. Hey, where do I put this? And I say, just put it in my hands. I'll move it around, and if I can't get there, I'll get back together with you and explain why.
Trust.
Because that's normally what I do, and that when I do these ones here, and that I have that sheet, and that, and I go through their post record, and that, and I'll say, okay, this can go here, but it could also go here.
Right.
That's if there's a problem. If they've got more than enough hours in that, I don't even.
Right.
I look at it and say, yeah, you ain't gonna have a problem.
Right.
But when they have maybe 200 hours and 100 of them is SWAT, then they might have a problem.
Right. Oh, and you know, sometimes we see in-service records come in, and they can get up to 15% of their required hours from in-service. So, and that's, Highway Patrol is real good about that. You guys keep a nice in-service record, so.
So we added post-crew training hours?
Yeah, did we do that with,
Yes.
With the intermediate?
Yes.
Okay.
Initially, because that was the amount of
That's what
that was the
Westfall,
length of
Westfall's only doing 32 hours
you
now.
You anticipated me, and that was at the December meeting that we did that.
Yes.
So you already have discipline-specific intermediate certificate, post-approved management course. We don't have to worry about the discipline-specific anywhere else, do we?
No, but under number 2, at the very end, it says first-line supervisor and most commonly is the rank of sergeant. I'm getting applications for corporals.
Yeah.
Or corporal?
Or you could,
Wait, how do you want it?
I don't know. I want to know what these guys want to do. You want your corporals to be supervisors?
No, they are from Missoula.
It depends.
They are in Missoula.
Yeah.
They're running shifts in the detention center. And
yeah, they're running on the streets, too.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, in some other agencies, it could be senior...
Deputy. Senior patrolman.
Senior patrolman.
Right.
So why don't we say, or is designated, or supervisory rank is designated by the employing agency.
Wait, this is slippery slope.
Well, you already have most commonly.
That's the discussion. Personally, I don't even think that you need that in there. Most commonly in rank. Let the...
Yeah, just take it out.
Let the agency...
Yeah, so that's responsibility, period. Take
period, responsibilities. That.
Yeah. So you put a period after the S there?
Supervision of employees of... an agency or
because the administrator is signing off that hey, this person meets those requirements and that he is a supervisor, whether it be in a jail, a shift, a special teams, whatever it may be.
No, and I'm good with that.
I think that works.
So, let's see. Under 3, officers who believe they are eligible must fill out and submit an application after agency endorsement?
With agency endorsement.
Well, when they fill out the application, it says right on there and that the administrator has to sign, so.
Well, the form does, but this says that all they have to do is fill it out and send it to us. They can just do it.
Yeah, with agency approval. Agency supervisor approval.
So, Chris, you're going to fix the grammatical stuff, so
yeah.
One of my things is fill out, how about complete?
Okay.
No, no, I fill out, but I don't. No,
this is a guy that never milked a cow.
I still don't think that you need that with that agency supervisor on there, because they can fill out all they want, but they have to get the administrator's signature in order to submit it to you.
Yeah, but if it's not an ARM, then...
I'd rather have it with that on there.
Agency supervisory approval, is that the language?
Yeah.
Agency administrator approval? I mean, that's a common denominator we use throughout the ARMs. Is agency administrator.
Okay.
That works.
That fixed that problem. Do you want that in the intermediate and advanced? Or does it only matter here because you've got the supervision?
No, I think it matters.
So you want that in all of them?
And see the master there?
We get tremendous traction when we can reference an ARM. You know, just like that little checklist. That's just been such a time saver for us. We get new training officers that say, hey, you know, send me this form, and I'll say, well, who are you training? Well, I'm going to take my guys out to the range next week. Well, so why do you want the form? Well, because I want to post approval. So does it open up to everybody? No. Well, it has to be. How come? Let me send you the ARM.
We have these crazy things. They're called
rules. You got an ARM for that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So nice.
It is. Yep. Yep.
Okay, so I think we've fixed that in all of them now. That was advanced. And this is supervisory. Did that. So now,
so in the intermediate and in the advanced, did we put that they have to apply?
Well, no, I put this exact language. Officers who believe they are eligible for a supervisory certificate must complete and submit an application with agency administrator approval to the director. So this is
if we pasted that, are we going to have the word supervisory certificate for each of those other?
Yeah. Sorry. All right.
There you go.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. So this is, what am I in now? Command?
Command.
Okay. All right. Talk amongst yourselves about command. You're going to get while you do that. That's supervisory.
That's supervisory there.
Okay.
No, when we're dealing with command applications, we have a little reference sheet that says these 200 hours are normally attained through a combination of courses, the FBI Command College, this leadership course that MLEA has started, or those are the two.
Northwestern Draft, I should say.
Well, if we had that could be a given, because is that 600 hours or something?
Yeah, there's other ones that are out there, and they're starting even more.
Okay.
So?
I think it was a, or equivalent.
Yeah, it's accumulating a minimum. Okay.
So does that mean we need to change that?
No, I'm okay if you guys are.
Okay. All right, anything else in the command? We done?
I think so.
Administrative.
It's the highest command. It's the highest command.
Oh, admin.
Yeah, look, that God on there.
That's what you are when you're the chief or sheriff.
Hey.
At least you think
it's funny what people think that are the chief and sheriff.
At least
Thank you, Art.
Until
you go home, your wife tells you.
Thank God.
That's what happened to me with my wife when I was on drill sergeant status. She said, don't even think that you're in charge here.
No.
Okay, now you guys, just so you guys understand, that probably the most common reason that I don't give the admin certificate is B, currently, guys that have been the chief or sheriff, they go back into their shifts or whatever, and they apply for this certificate, and if they're not currently in that position, they don't get it.
Currently and for a period of 1 year prior to the day.
And I'm okay with that. That's just the reason that they don't get it. First of all, denied mine when I quit being the sheriff. He said, and he didn't cite the ERM. He said, no, you just can't have it. You should have heard my response.
I can relate to them conversations with Bill over the military stuff.
So I think we're okay with this one.
We don't want to change that currently?
No.
Okay. Instructor requirements. None of this was changed except what Alan changed with the primary and master, and those are all underlined in here. And then we changed the application to be more in line with the application process for the intermediate and on certificate.
And this is another one of those ones in that where they, the, you know, signature of the agency head would be on there.
Well,
or the training officer.
That the reason I didn't,
or his designee.
Yeah, I didn't go ahead and put that in is because there was some discussion. This is not my area of expertise. There was some discussion about instructors who were not sponsored by agencies.
They can't have a certificate.
Okay. Just making sure.
They have to be a part-time or full-time officer.
They would need the same language we would put in the others then.
If you need an instructor, just get tested.
Right.
I think we should be applying for a grant to print about 1,000 of these when they're done.
When they're posted?
Yeah.
And just send them,
yes.
Mail them out,
yes.
To everybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pay it
down for several cases.
So this is that all right for? Is it an instructor certificate that was called?
Primary instructor, primary professional instructor application.
So maybe I can just say any instructor certificate.
No, we're in 2313-401, right? Okay.
Well, there's three kinds.
There's primary, master, and professional.
Right. Okay.
So
the difference in the master and the professional is that they have to have.
Okay, just stop a minute, Sarah. Go back to one. Okay. 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 Number two. This is what we're looking for on the application. You look at their experience, you look to see that they've attended some kind of training, and we look to see that they've got a 40-hour minimum instructor development course or equivalent. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that somebody's 32-hour course might be as good as this 40-hour course?
They have a degree in secondary education or adult ed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
So is that passed then?
Well, that's how it used to be. You could either have instructor development or that secondary education, you know, be able to teach.
Yeah.
If your degree was in teaching, then you were covered.
So that kindergarten teacher that's got an elementary kindergarten-specific
teaches.
Well, I have a bad analogy.
last night.
what a match.
Yeah. Okay, I'm good as long as you guys are.
Do you like counsel there, or do you want director?
The instructor available course or equivalent.
Or if you're
approved
it,
by the council,
keep,
I'd say okay. Stay with the council now.
Now, we have the endorsement from the applicant's agency head here in D.
Yep.
We still want them to sign off on the application.
I'm just looking at the professional one right now, and it does have on there is the agency administrator authorization.
Okay.
And how I've done in Missoula since I've been there is that these are ones that I take to the chief. Okay, this is this. You know, so that he's aware and that whose instructors in his department.
Well, it seems like it's any of them.
Yes.
Have.
Well, yeah, they're all the same. I mean, they require the agency. But if, you know, like, if the chief isn't there and that he's on vacation, then the assistant chief, because in all reality, he's the chief then.
Yeah, go back to 3. 3C must have an endorsement from the post director
or
designee attesting to his competencies. The only way that I would be able to attest to the competencies is because I know that he's got a primary instructor certificate in that. Okay. Now, when you go down to 4, they have to have the endorsement from the post director and the agency administrator.
Post director or designee and agency.
And I guess it's kind of the same as number 3.
Do you want that agency administrator on 3?
It's there.
It's there in D.
Okay,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Gentlemen, I still would not be remiss if I don't bring up that point there and add on 3B where it talks about that 40 hour. There's going to have to be a void filled there somehow. And that,
because for the curriculum design class?
Right. Because right now, as I stated last time, right now you have no professional development program that your primary instructor can reach to the master instructor without going outside of the state. And there isn't a department here, I believe. Chief, you can, sure, you can chime in here. I don't think they're going to pay for, go outside to get that 40 hours of training and that for that curriculum design and that when there was other trainings that were more valuable to them.
Is that 32 hours? That's different. That's not
no.
The same training.
I mean, this could be that minimum 40, that could be 32 hours, but it's right there, or equivalent approved by the council. So if it's 32 hours and the council approves it, then
do you turn it down?
When
you say 40?
Do you deny? No, we've been doing 32 because of West Falls. This is a different type of class, though. This is a curriculum.
Yeah, that was my problem.
It's not an instructor development. It's
but, Truman, you're saying that they have to go out of state to...
Right now, before, Winnie was the one who did that, the 40-hour curriculum design. She was the only one in the state that I'm aware of that did it. Now that she's not doing that anymore, you know, I think that it's going to be, you know, Pulse's responsibility now to, you know, look at that. And
you're good with it remaining as a requirement?
Oh, yeah.
Or?
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, that's when you... The different levels in the instructor in that I think are important, and that's why you have that on there, the post director or designee attesting. So, for instance, in that I teach verbal judo, and the designee for the Verbal Judo Institute that I teach from and at is the president who just did the class for my recertification in Missoula. And then the chief is attesting in that I'm still working in that capacity as a professional instructor. But if you have a primary instructor, he can't get to a master instructor level right now in the state without going outside it to get that curriculum.
Okay.
design class.
I'm just saying. Well, I'm not hearing anybody from the field saying, hey, where is it?
Yeah.
I haven't. This is the only discussion that I've had about this, and I'm probably just oblivious to the need, see? Really. You know?
Like I said, I'm just saying that there's no professional development growth for instructors other than primary right now, and that is met in the state. I mean, we do a lot of instructor development classes throughout the state, but that curriculum class has always been done here at the academy.
So we're really going to be in the same boat with four then, with professional instructor level as well.
That's what you're saying. Yes.
Is there any class at all anywhere in the state? Or it's just not 40 hours?
And there's not one that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there a university might have one in that curriculum design.
Yeah, you might get, in some situation, you might get a person who was a teacher in the past or so, I mean, and have their credentials. But you're just saying that we should.
Is it something we should change the requirement, or is it just leave it and hope somebody will fill the need?
Well, it's up to what I think Bill's saying. We need to fill the need. Okay, we need to get with the academy and get with folks and try and figure out a way to make it work.
Find the trainers.
I always like to set the bar higher, and I like the idea that these are set. Let's perform to them, not change them.
Okay.
Right.
Any other changes to the requirements here, other than I need to go back down and change this? I've got it at any instructor certificate. So any of the above?
Well, these are the only instructor certificates.
Okay. Yeah, so we're satisfied with that?
Yeah, just those are
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. Designated incident command.
That's a new one.
I haven't seen an application for that yet.
This is, we really didn't change this at all, except that application, which I will change here too.
Turning the page on my computer, Bill.
I think that you may see some of these come across in that, especially with the military guys, and that
And this one, I didn't see it. I hadn't looked at it, but do you have to have that progression of certificates to get here? Because you could actually have incident commanders that have no rank.
Well, it says that you have to have an intermediate.
Okay. But not command or...
No, just intermediate.
Never mind.
Well, let's see. E is shall have successfully served in a command or general staff capacity as attested to on an application by the applicant's agency administrator. So I guess...
That can be incident commander on an event. Or
right?
Yep.
Any number of things.
Right.
Great. Now we've got reserve officers. This looks like it was all new. That was because it was the one that we changed from the, what were they called, Chris?
One-time budgets?
No, the things that the council was passing, resolution.
Oh, resolution.
It was
right.
A resolution, and we turned it into an ARM. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it's all new, but really it was decided by the council.
Right, policies. Policies and resolutions, right?
And so does that come right out of
there it was.
732-201?
No, it's post-resolution 08, adopted in August 21st of 2008.
So but I think it did parallel the statutory requirements.
Sure.
732-213.
732-214 is the basic training program required, and that looks like it.
Is that 214 and not 213? Have I got the wrong statute here?
Let's see. No, the appointment of the reserve officer is 213.
Okay.
But the basic, all the training is under 214, so
okay.
This is the following.
Okay. So we don't need to talk about that one at all? Then, same thing here. This was a resolution by the council from 2010.
Okay. So
this was done in response to the nationwide carry requirement that a state must have a minimum qualification in order for officers to all officers, current and retired, to be able to meet the HR 2218 requirement federally.
So we haven't changed any of the language.
We'll stop right there.
Okay.
So under D, that's the AR-15 that we use. We shot a 20-round course, but we shot from the 50 to about the 3-yard line with that course. And this says a minimum range of 50 yards.
We talked about also, Perry, not about going 10 rounds instead of the 20 rounds.
And how come?
Give me a second to find that one.
Maybe that should say maximum range on the patrol rifle. Was that the intent?
We thought they wanted you to have some rounds from that far out.
That's what I'm saying. But
we had some of that where it was actually
50 yards.
You had to fire places while you were moving towards the target this way and this way.
I believe it had to do with just the area, rural versus urban.
So are you thinking 10 rounds is sufficient?
Well, I mean, we fire back at the 50, but we're like you. We go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we just change that? Fire at a maximum range of 50 yards.
Okay. So we know that we want that proficiency to built in from there, and it can be, you know, because we're shooting that thing, you know, right from our chest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have the language in this that talked about proficiency with the weapons that they are assigned or whatever?
Yeah.
So they're, okay.
Yeah, scroll. I think okay. You scroll down.
All right. I didn't mean to jump to that.
No, that's okay.
Customarily carried by that officer. Right. Okay.
All right. We're good. That kind of covers everything,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to be clear, you have minimum ranges in all of these other ones, and then a maximum range with the patrol rifle. Is that okay? We're not setting a minimum. We're only setting a maximum.
No, because the patrol rifle works from 50 or 100 yards in. The precision rifle is 50 or 100 yards out.
Well,
but a shotgun, you have a minimum for a 15. And a handgun, you have a minimum of 15. And a handgun, I mean, aren't the stats...
I'm not sure if that, but to me, that wouldn't you want someone to be able to get someone with that rifle more than 50 yards away?
But that's under the precision.
The patrol rifle, and that rifle, can go up to over 400 meters.
Yeah. But that's our minimum standard.
Yeah.
Well, this you're setting a maximum, not a minimum.
No, this is our minimum standards. I'm not saying
minimum. I see. Okay.
Okay, so
Truman, are you saying that maybe under patrol rifle it should say a maximum of more than 50 yards, 100 yards, or something that way?
Or do you want 20 yards fired?
Think of your own course in that. For your course, and that, do they fire more? I would think that, you know, as a deputy, that they would fire at a greater distance than what a city officer would. just because of the geographics.
Yeah.
In the city versus in the you know, in the country, as you speak of.
And you know, the distinction between a precision rifle and a patrol rifle becomes more gray.
Well, that precision rifle, to me, what that precision rifle means is a sniper.
Yeah.
Why don't we do what we did with the handgun? Why don't we say a minimum of 20 rounds fired from point blank to 100 yards?
I like it.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right, wait, you got to say that again. So this is for the patrol rifle.
Yeah, minimum fired at a minimum of point blank.
Well,
and do it for all of them.
Can you just block and move the text you have under A?
No, we don't want it. We want it. Let's see.
Point blank 2-1-100.
And why wouldn't you do it for shotgun too?
Or, you could.
Yeah, point blank to a minimum of 15 yards. Precision to 100. Patrol rifle to 100.
With that shotgun? Some guys are using shotguns with that slug barrel, I guess, huh?
Well, I'm just saying. Rifle sights.
Yeah. Point blank.
That's what I'm trying to shoot.
But we don't want to.
That lets them develop their own programs.
Yeah.
To how many yards on the shotgun?
15.
15's fine.
You good with that?
12.
I think you need to extend the shotgun.
25.
As we go down through these, probably 25 on the shotgun.
Okay.
Precision rifle in the hell.
The minimum range of 100 yards is probably appropriate on
100 yards. You need to put a 5 there.
Where?
Where your cursor's blinking there, next to the 2.
It's there.
It's okay. She only struck the 1.
Yeah. So it is 25.
Oh, she struck the 1.
Yeah.
Precision rifle is fine. Patrol rifle, a minimum of 20 rounds fired at a minimum point blank range, 250 yards.
Or you could say
fired yards. For
to 100 yards, we wanted that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think to 100 there.
And then strike 50 and put 100 in.
You know, and the cap and a saving grace in us is number 2.
I think you want to change that to firm.
That's your submit. You can qualify however far out
you
want.
It leaves it open ended.
From a minimum of 100 yards.
Okay, so for the handgun,
that's
a 30 round minimum course right there. Mm-hmm.
And MSP came to the board and argued that a bunch. And said 30 rounds was too much.
I remember.
Really?
But, yes, they felt that they could only afford 18 rounds.
Who said that?
The council did rule that 30 rounds was necessary. But that's just kind of a short, quick history on it, on how we got to that point.
Okay.
If I remember that.
The language on the fully automatic weapon, do we need to... include point blank instead of starting at 7 yards? What's you guys' feelings that deal with that?
For
ours, and that we start back and we go forward.
Okay.
Or no, I'm sorry. I take that back. We start forward and we go back. But we start initial right at the target net, striking the target away.
So point blank would be appropriate language to at the minimum. Do you want to put an outer distance on it? We've got the point blank. Do you want it out to? Or do you need that?
No, because this is again the fully automatic weapon net for us, and that is going to be our SWAT operators.
15 yards.
And, that, and, they, yards and they have
something.
They shoot with the MSTOA standards.
Okay.
That's what they shoot at for the precision rifle and for the M4s or
See, I don't know what the...
Or nines.
What the outside range of that fully automatic weapon is. What do you guys train from, the 15 or point blank back to the 15 with that?
I'll look up your NTOA.
Well, originally you had at the range of 7 to 10 yards. So if you're changing it, it would be point blank to 10 yards if you're changing just the initial. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Point blank to 10.
Well, maybe we could just go point blank to, from point blank to 7 to 10 yards.
Well, I'm not sure what that means. Does it mean you have to have point blank, then 7, then 10, or point blank and somewhere between 7 and 10?
Well, I think it means that if you wanted to fire 30 from 10 yards, you could. Or if you wanted to fire 30 point blank, you could.
Fired at ranges from point blank to 10 yards.
I don't think so. It says ranges, plural.
You mean you thought 30 rounds fired at ranges
from point blank to 10 yards. That implies that there needs to be more than one range, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got five rounds at full automatic and...
Five rounds fired in full automatic for two or three. At a minimum of five rounds somehow.
Right, it says a minimum of 30 rounds, so if you shoot 30, you need 25 full automatic and 5 semi. If you shoot more than that, then you have to be proportional.
Fired at a minimum range from point blank to 7 or 10 yards. Right? So you need the minimum before range?
I don't think so.
Well, this one's different because its range is plural.
Right.
Well, I don't know if it has to be ranges per plural. I think that would allow them to develop their own program. Because that's what we're doing with the other ones.
What's the standard? Is there a standard for fully automatic?
Yes. That's what I'm looking right now on that in the NTOA website.
So that reads like the other ones, doesn't it? Or from a minimum range of, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Our fully automatic weapons are .223s, but there might be other fully automatic weapons in use that are
nine.
Handgun caliber, right?
They're nine, the M&P5s.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of agencies still have them in it.
Out of curiosity, this is per person, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, if they're assigned that weapon or...
Mm-hmm. If they routinely carry it or whatever word.
Mm-hmm. Customarily.
Yeah. That's a lot of bullets.
So many that the patrol can't afford them.
Apparently.
Prison.
I know a good dealer if anybody's interested.
We have a lot of officers.
We sell a lot of bullets. I'm just saying.
I was at a gun show in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago. And
a big one?
Was it SHOT Show?
The SHOT Show. It was called Rocky Mountain. And I was amazed at the amount of ammunition being sold.
Really?
They even furnished the hand carts to take several cases at a time onto your vehicle.
Cool.
But
we
it
have
was...
Everybody still has access to and can take away.
Fire starts to
leave. I'd never been to a gun show the size of that one. It just happened to be in the hotel during our conference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should, if you ever get a chance, go to SHOT Show. It's really cool.
Yeah,
it's on my bucket list.
Matt was down there like this year.
It was... My husband is a gun dealer. That's what he does. And 3 days at SHOT Show, and he was totally overwhelmed. I mean, he just finally said, I can't do it anymore. I'm done.
We good here? Or are we still waiting?
We're waiting on that.
I was looking at the stand.
Let's go ahead, and we'll come back to you.
Okay. Any issues with that?
The IPSC official target or dimensional equivalent. Everybody okay with that language?
Yep.
This one we've already dealt with pretty well. Do we have any other general issues than the ones we've already brought up?
Do that last to their
best of 10 days from termination appointment.
Okay.
I think that's the right place to put that, don't you guys?
From discharge. Yep.
They can't call it a higher term slip anymore.
This is the... We've already dealt with this a little bit.
Well, we spent all morning on this, didn't we?
Yeah. Do we need to...
I think we're good with that.
Let's not look at it again.
Nobody look. Don't think about it anymore.
First one's going to take a nap before we drive home.
We've already kind of done this when we were doing the other one as well. The 301 refers to this as well as a requirement. If you're going to get post credit, you have to abide by this as well. Any issues there?
No.
Just over halfway, people. Okay. The basic course, none of these changes are new, meaning the other council meetings we've dealt with them, B was the big change. And I think that was before you, Perry.
It is.
Is there anything you want to add to that?
Nope.
Okay.
Are you guys good there?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Scroll.
All right, that was just renumbering. I tried to note for you, Chris, all of the renumbering. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's a bunch of these pages. Because Chris has to do this awful...
Yeah, and they won't be repealed and renumbered. They'll just be renumbered in the...
Yeah, I didn't know what the language was. I was trying to make it clear for you.
Right, you put the renumbered ones in a separate group.
Yeah. Although now even some of the renumbered ones have been changed now.
So I'll have to talk to the Secretary of State's office about what he's doing.
Okay, there have not been any changes except to fix some of the code sections. They referred to code sections that didn't exist anymore. So I updated those. And a little bit of formatting, but other than that, it's the same rule it has always been. Does anybody have any issues with that?
Just terminate the coroner.
There's a lot of but there's a lot of
terminate the coroner, he's going to rule on the cop job.
That's right.
You know?
All right, 702. This is the this is one of the we dealt with one of the main issues in this one, which was that addition of subsection O. C here, 2C. This was a discussion that we had at the December post council meeting about addiction, and we had talked about wanting addiction to only be an issue if it affects the officer's job or other officers. So we cut and pasted from the mental health or mental condition in B and moved it down into C as well, just changed it a little bit. So that was something that the council itself did, but I just wanted you guys to see the language, make sure we were comfortable with that. Most of the rest of these changes I'm kind of glancing through because we've discussed them a lot in the major post meeting. So if you guys stop me if you need to. We dealt with J already today to fix that. I think subsection 3 is the only other major change, which you guys have heard me talk about before. I have never liked, have encouraged strongly everyone never to enforce this current, this ARIN that is, or this subsection is currently in effect. I think it's awful.
Three?
Yeah. Oh, no, this, I'm sorry, I'm not talking about three. I'm talking about, actually, it's not showing up in here.
No.
I think I must have. Oh, no, here it is, E. E is it. We fixed it. From commission to conviction. Sorry, I was confused about that one. But I am not in the business of proving criminal elements in the civil context.
Does that need to say or plea of guilty to a felony, or is that just assumed?
So guilty is a conviction.
Yeah. A plea of no contest is a conviction, which is also helpful.
So then what does plea mean?
I don't know. Well, yeah, that's weird. That's a good point. Conviction. I mean, plea of guilty is a conviction.
Okay. So we can...
just say conviction.
Well, I think maybe that was in there just to be clear, but if we're all satisfied.
The conviction of a felony.
You should change that to A, or just leave it out completely. Conviction of a felony or an offense would be a felony if committed in this state.
Now, there was one other thing that we kind of bounced around, but never got put in ARIM, and I'm just going to give it a last chance here. We had talked about crimes that would not allow you to carry a firearm, which are not always felonies, or not necessarily involving unlawful sexual conduct, unlawful physical violence, and not necessarily a conviction of a felony. No, like a PFMA is a good example. We might be able to say it was a physical violence, but if it was a threat or something like, you know, we might get into some issues here. So the question was, do we want to add another subsection in here that talks about any conviction of any offense that would make it unlawful for you to carry a firearm?
Well, where does F fall into that?
That's what we were talking about.
Well, we had had, so F was originally, if you can see the E was and F were combined.
Okay.
And so we pulled F out into its own because we didn't want, the point was that we didn't want the conviction of offense involving unlawful sexual conduct or physical violence to be confused with it having to be a felony, because I've had that argument made to me before. Well, it has to be a felony of unlawful sexual conduct. So we made that clear. But I'm still concerned that there might be offenses out there, like a PFMA, that people could argue are not unlawful sexual conduct or unlawful physical violence that would mean you can't carry a firearm and should therefore mean you can't have a post certificate, or your post certificate should be suspended or something like that. And
I think the U.S. Supreme Court has a case involving this issue.
Yeah, and the problem was, and what we had discussed about it before was, do we want to just rely on federal law and say, well, if you can't carry a firearm, then you automatically don't meet minimum standards? But the problem I'm just bringing up again is whether we want to make it clear in the ARM itself. Here's a clear subsection I can quote to in your revocation for why we are beginning MAPA proceedings against you. And you guys know way more about that than I do, so I'm kind of deferring to expertise here as well, because, I mean,
well, if you've got a guy, if any of us employed a guy that was convicted of a PFMA, as the sheriff, I knew he couldn't be in possession of a firearm, let alone carry it on duty. So I would have to terminate him for cause.
Discharge him.
You would him out and shoot him with a firearm. He wasn't allowed.
Every time I think about liberty.
Well, or at least change his
duties. Yeah.
But that doesn't affect his post certificate. And that's the question.
But if we're a restorative rights state, is that contradictory to Montana's ability for offenders to regain that right?
Well, we could put language in that said as long as you are, you know, or something like that, that until you regain your rights.
In Montana, once your rights have been restored, your federal right to own firearms is restored.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
But it's not restored in other states. Only in the restorative state.
I don't think he answered that one.
Mr. Marvin.
And I would say, and this is why I think
he got that passed.
Who did?
Marvin. Gary Marvin. He got it passed through the Congress. In the restorative states, if your rights are restored by the state, your federal right to own a firearm is restored. Only in Montana. In Idaho, you'd be a felon in violation of Wyoming River.
I've had conversations in the last year with U.S. Marshals that said, would you send me the facts of this case, this conviction? And I looked at it, and when I called them back, I said, well, you know, this guy pled to an assault. And they said, this marshal told me, it doesn't matter if the elements of the offense meet the standard for PFMA. They're revoked. They cannot be in possession of a firearm.
Until they discharge their sentence.
Until forever, according to this guy.
Yeah, the feds are...
Wrong? Discharge.
I think we're wrong. Restorative.
I think we leave it alone in this one.
Okay.
This case,
and that was... I just wanted to make sure that this is our last chance, so...
And I recognize it may make it more difficult in the case of an individual that we're looking at. But I guess you got to almost go to I as the catch-all then and do something there.
Okay. And I could also try and do it under J. She was... possibility.
Well, I think we're okay, though, right now, aren't we?
I believe so.
Okay. Any other issues with 702?
No.
Sorry, okay.
Anybody else?
This is where, these are where we start getting into a bunch of the changes, because we changed the entire process for how you deal with contested cases. So this ARM, which would be...
But that process has already been adopted by the board, so keep going.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be much controversy substantively about this.
Right. This was more... And it's, I think that this was putting better wording in the ARM to reflect the best practices that we have currently adopted. So this was an essential rewrite from scratch. Do you guys want to read through this?
I think we're good with those.
Okay.
Those have been
we've
pretty well hammered out
in
detail, I think, to everyone's
satisfaction. Are you okay with that, or do you want to?
Yeah, no,
that?
I'm good.
Okay. I think substantively, this is going to be the thing that will affect the business the most. Okay, this change, this was something that we had discussed at the December meeting, and Harry, I think either I or you, one of us, was confused. I went back, so after we get through the review of the investigation, we're on the flow chart here, we're in the point, we've sent it back to the agency, it's come back, we're in an investigative stage, we've done whatever we need to do with getting releases, and now we have a body of information, and this statement is what the director can do at that point. And at the December meeting, we had discussed, there was a comment that came in from the field, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who that came from.
You're in Wade.
Okay. And there were five options that he had given us for findings of the director. And the council spent some substantial time and put them together into three. But then Perry, in the 8.2 draft, you put in all five back in.
Yeah.
So I didn't know why you had done that. If that was just confusion.
Well, I must have been confused because I thought the consensus was that we were going to follow those five because that's actually part of the IACP's protocol.
Yes.
And these officers that are going to training on these
internal affairs.
Yeah, they're coming back with that. And I'd like...
So I went back and looked at my notes. So that was what I was worried about. And I went back and looked at my notes from the December meeting. And I have very specific notes that, no, we were not going to take all five. We were, and the reason was we didn't like exonerated, because Close is not in the business of exonerating
right.
people.
Exactly right.
And we didn't like... unfounded, because we didn't want to say, we didn't want to paint ourselves into a corner of saying something was unfounded. So we had combined the language that we liked from those into the three together. And I just wanted to revisit that because if there was any problem, we had very specific wording at the December meeting that my notes reflected, and I wanted to make sure this is that wording, but I want to make sure that everybody's still comfortable with that.
Can you roll it back just a little
bit? Sure, yeah, yeah. And I just, so on the side here before I roll it back, is these are the five. I put mm-hmm. them in this comment so you could see them.
And who's making these findings?
The director.
Okay, and this is in the investigation process.
It's, yeah, after the investigation has been completed and he has a body of knowledge.
Okay.
Basically.
Perry, are you okay with that?
I would change preponderance of evidence to substantial evidence.
We talked about that, too, at the December meeting.
Well, let me make my pitch again. Preponderance of evidence is a standard that applies at an evidentiary hearing. And after both sides have been heard. And preponderance of evidence, because the evidence presented by one side outweighs the evidence that was presented by the other. Now, if this is just at the investigation stage, and the other side hasn't even had a chance to have their say yet, preponderance of evidence, I would suggest, is not the right standard.
Well, these are the findings at the end of the investigation. That's
right.
After we've written a letter to the officer. That's after we've
mm-hmm.
given them an opportunity to give us their P file and their,
mm-hmm.
their confidential criminal stuff.
And they have responded was the point, is the officer has had the chance to respond.
Mm-hmm. But do they have to lay all their cards on the table at this stage, or can they put additional evidence on the table at the hearing?
I mean, I think that option is certainly available to them, but the
okay.
idea was we were, I think it was twofold. First of all, we
okay.
were reflecting the ultimate decision because we wanted Perry to be looking at it as the likelihood of winning ultimately. And then also the idea that, yeah, because I remember you making the same comment, and the idea was, well, the officer has had the chance to respond
mm-hmm.
and present evidence, so he is kind of doing
sure.
a weighing.
Okay, I've made my pitch.
What word
were
you going
to say? Instead of preponderance of, I'd say substantial evidence.
Can I ask a question?
Investigation disclosed.
Substantial instead of a preponderance of.
What happens in the case of Joe Chief of Police calls up and says, I got this letter from one of the people who live in my city. They're complaining about Harry, the police officer, and I'm going to do an investigation. He goes and does the investigation, comes back, and he's got, he did his investigation. He determined that something had happened, and he disciplined the guy, and the guy went back to work. Okay, in the meantime, mm-hmm. Perry got an anonymous letter, you know, from Billings. That's where they all see him in Jenny. And it says that this deputy, this police officer is a no-good, rotten SOB, and he should be taken out, hung, drawn, and quartered in the village square, all this other stuff. But the chief has taken care of the problem with his person. Discipline has been meted out. Okay, where does that go with this?
Well, actually, part of that process in 702 is going to define that. How we interact with these agencies, that flow chart. And POST doesn't get involved until we get a finding or a ruling.
I think we're after that stage has already happened. So up here.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Is that
yeah.
Now we're at the part where the investigation is basically, here's the information that was gleaned by the chief
mm-hmm.
in his investigation,
right.
Here's his determination, his recommendation,
right.
All that. Now we're going ahead.
Well, it will never go
or
ahead
not.
Until this status subcommittee has a chance
okay.
to review everything.
That's
right.
Fine. Cleared it up for me.
Yeah.
I'm good.
But the chief's finding is not going to be binding on POST. Right?
That's
the
true.
Chief, if the chief says, okay, Stern talking to by me was enough in this case, that finding is going to go to POST, and Perry can say, no, baloney. I mean, I think this guy deserves to be shot.
And the status subcommittee too, not
right, and the committee, and it can go through the POST process, regardless of what the local chief does with it. The local chief gets the first shot, but POST has an independent authority to review it from a certification standpoint.
But practically, in Perry,
So if we have I can see that circumstance if we've got a chief that's totally corrupt.
Right.
Okay.
Well, like Wadsworth, for example.
Yeah. I love how he's an example for everything.
Yeah.
He's the
yeah,
only one we can talk about.
You know, if
yeah.
One of his cops had been brought in here, Wadsworth would have said, no, I took care of it within the department.
He did. That's what happened with his son.
But we're actually investigating his issues now, too.
Yeah, but...
Probably.
But the point is that it doesn't get to stay inside the locker room anymore.
Okay.
That POST has an obligation to at least look at what the chief did and decide whether further action against the certificate.
And the trade-off is we're telling chiefs and sheriffs and administrators, look, guys, take care of your business.
Mm-hmm. You get the first shot.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
And that is memorialized for the first time in this ARM. That was not – it was not – entirely clear before under the old ARM, so that was one of the things that we expanded
okay.
substantially.
Point caveat, though, I don't think Perry would investigate an anonymous complaint, would you?
No.
Yeah.
No, in fact, those go right to the case status committee so that they at least hear what the allegation is.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you ask these questions because Tony can, he's on that case status committee, and we have these conversations all the time. What did chief do? Where's the sheriff at with this? Let's look word by word at his ruling that he provided to us. And some of them are pretty big. We've gotten complaints from chiefs and sheriffs where the case status committee has looked at them and they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to send it back to them and find out what they did. Because they'll make the original complaint to us and never give us a ruling. Hey, my guy did this. What are you going to do about it? Out here a little bit.
Or conversely, the person will be fired and then stay status.
I knew you were
going to
say that.
Right.
I knew it.
And you know what? I think it speaks to the status committee's respect and deep regard for the administrators of the state of Montana and this law enforcement community.
I just want to make sure, okay? I've got a real vested interest in this thing, and I want to make sure that.
And that was one, and we glossed over it, but we probably shouldn't,
mm-hmm.
because that's when I said the major change practically. I think this ARM particularly is where the drastic change will happen, and it's not necessarily a drastic change procedurally from what we've been doing in the last little while, but it's a change to what is required by the ARM.
To
sort of make it non-optional.
And we're going to have to sell it.
We're going to have to wait.
We're going to have to go out and tell folks, this is it, folks. This is A, B, C, and D. You get the first bite of the apple.
Yeah, and I hope, originally the flowchart was on the website. I don't know if it still is.
I don't know either.
So hopefully once we get these ARMs, I mean, once we get the ARMs up, the ARMs will be posted on POTS website as well, and I would link it right to the flowchart, which at least for me is a lot easier to follow than the ARM.
Yeah.
And then Perry, on the phone with somebody, when they call, can say, see, we're at step two in the flowchart.
I'm good. I just wanted to make sure.
But generally, and I get calls like this all the time because people on my post, well, Officer X did so X, Y, and Z. What's POTS going to do about it? And I say, well, what have you done about it?
That's a great response.
Well, not the...
I can get them in the mail with no return address.
That's not our job.
Letter bombs to go with them.
Well, the last one, I pulled it out of the mailbox and I looked at it, and it was actually done relatively professionally. Mm-hmm. And the minute I started tearing on it, I thought, oh man, do I really want to do this? But it's the one I called you about. I have since shredded it.
And everybody got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Going back to the original question.
Hey, let's stop just a minute. Go back up. Because I'm feeling so good about this, I just want to stop right there. Accept the voluntary surrender of a certificate. In the last couple of months, we've got a couple of them. That's really good for us.
Yeah.
That means that we've really opened some doors. Mm-hmm. People are calling and saying, hey, as part of this discharge agreement, what do you guys need in order to get that certificate? And we've got a form that we can email them. They print it. They sign it off. And Dan Moore walked in this morning and handed me one. I think that's a real testimony of what you guys are doing here. You're reaching out. We're getting information out. And people are listening a little bit. And they're saying, hey, this is a big process. Can we be part of it? I really like it. I'm really feeling heartened by it, to be honest with you.
And now, also, not to, dollars all the time, but each one of those we get saves between $50,000 and $70,000.
Yeah.
And the fact that people in the field are voluntarily saving post that money is pretty awesome. Okay, so back to this question. Are we okay with that language?
That is the way that we left it then in December.
I brought my notes if you want to look at them.
Yeah, I lost this argument before. I'm happy to lose it again.
I'm good.
Okay. So, I think that gets us done with 703 now.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, could you back up there just one little bit? Three, it was sustained. No finding.
Not sustained or sustained, but ours are a little bit different than the way...
Those are the three categories that you're going to...
Yes.
Okay.
Those are the findings.
Because I know the lieutenant's going to ask me about that.
But we kind of are, if you look at the findings as they're written in the, what is the acronym?
EIGB.
Yes. They're a little different than that because the council combined some of them.
Can we at least take the word clearly out of little two there? Let me say the reason is that if the evidence is equally balanced or is not sufficient to prove the allegation, that's one thing. But if the standard for two, not sustained, is clearly prove or disprove, and the standard in two is preponderance, and three is preponderance of the evidence, there are cases in which the evidence isn't going to be enough to clearly prove, but it's also going to exceed preponderance of the evidence. So, because preponderance of the evidence, as we all know, is equally balanced. Clear evidence is a higher standard than that. So,
just take clearly out.
If you take clearly out, then two and three at least provide some rough equivalent, rough balance to each other. In other words, if you're subject to dismissal under two, that means you automatically didn't make three. Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
And if you make three, you automatically didn't make two. Yeah, one little bit of that.
And just historically, the point of two was to combine not sustained and unfounded together. So it was one was no finding, two was not sustained and unfounded, and three was sustained out of the five that we had originally. So I think that change matches with what the full council wanted to do with two, according to my notes. Anyway, everybody's okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That was the last big substantive one we had. These are more changes to the process, getting rid of the original errands and redoing them to match that process a little bit more closely. This is what happens after we get through the most of the flowchart when we get to that preceding stage. Everybody okay? Do you want me to keep scrolling? So this is what happens in the formal process. This is an all new ARM, explaining that process a little bit more. And again, the purpose of these was to make it not just clear for POST, but clear for everybody. The idea was if you get a letter from POST, that letter one, you should be able to look in these ARMs and know exactly what's going to happen to you. This is a model rule, obviously. It's allowed for by the Montana Code of Stated. If there's a serial killer running around, we can pull his POST license, essentially.
Can I ask a question about that
Yeah.
real quick?
Yeah.
Is that, did we construct that in such a way that in the event of the serial killer that's running around or the situation where the chief or the sheriff needs some help, does that afford us the opportunity to call him up and say, hey, chief, we can help you out here. How about if we do this? Jerk it.
I think so.
Well, actually, what was the question on that? If you've got an officer out there who's...
He's the guy. Let's say here, an emergency suspension of a license. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you find out one of your guys is a serial killer and you need some help. That gives us the opportunity to play the good guy and say, hey, chief, here's something we can do to get this guy off the street for you right now.
Yeah. Well, serial killer, in that situation, I think it's easy to argue that public health, safety, and or welfare would require emergency action.
And the
fair, you'd say that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And the point is that...
Yeah.
But it gives us an option.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And the point is that it gives Harry the option to do it without the full council, so that it can really be an immediate response. I think that, and it was the model. It was based on the model rule, but I think that allowed the director, especially in our case,
and the officer would have an opportunity to apply for a contested case.
Yeah.
To challenge what Perry did,
but
he just would do it from the perspective of somebody who was suspended, as opposed or not. Who had no license as opposed to one who did have a license. Because in licensing cases, the guy continues to hold the license until the process is over.
So these are all model rules that we're going through here, and we haven't really dealt with at all. It's just a cleanup to adopt the model rules we can. Discovery, this is also a brand new ARM, and the purpose of this was to save POST a bunch of money and make the process in a contested case procedure clear, because in the cases that we've had so far, all of the cases that we've had so far, we have had extensive discovery issues, and so this was an attempt to try and streamline that process and save POST some money. And this governs what happens in the actual contested case in front of the hearing examiner, usually. Anything else to add?
I think this just makes it work.
And the difference between this and the model rule is that the under the model rule, the hearing officer does not have the authority to impose sanctions.
Right. And we changed that based on our past experience.
We have hearing examiner now can impose the sanction, but they can't enforce the sanction without the assistance of the district court. That's what this says.
Yeah.
Which is just a recognition of an inherent limitation on the part of the administrative agency. It can't do that. It can't enforce that without the assistance of the court.
But it at least saves us the step of having to brief that issue is the point.
Well, you have to brief it again in front of the judge, probably.
Okay. Hearing examiners, this is a change. The only thing we changed at the December meeting was Chris's addition of the Uniform District Court Rules. Which is very straightforward.
Right, and the difference is that the rules of civil procedure don't set any deadlines for the filing of briefs in support of any motions. Those are all in the month in the Uniform District Court Rules. So by adopting Uniform District Court Rule, that adopts the 10-day periods for filing briefs.
So again, this is the point of all of these are to streamline the process and save posts and help out the hearing examiner when we're going through this process. This is the hearing, again, we had an original rule which we redid to make it more in line with the model rules and also same reasons that we've already talked about.
Right. The existing regulation doesn't talk about the conduct of the hearing at all. It just talks about what happens after the awareness enter. And so this fills in some of those blanks.
So, does that make sense to you, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Me trying to help you out here. All right. The record, essentially, that we're going to have a record of it, and it's the hearing exam. This was also based on past experience. And the fact that now we have multiple hearing examiners makes this important because each hearing examiner needs to present a record, and that record becomes important when we get to Board of Crime Control because Board of Crime Control is the one reviewing that record, and so we need them to all look the same. So that was a little bit of that also based on the model rule. Appeals, it's not a rule, essentially. This is all procedure, which doesn't affect you guys very much, but it affects me a lot. This is a modification of the model rule, talking about ex parte communications. As you guys know, we've had a lot of trouble with this in the past, because folks like to send things to the post-council members and talk to them. So this, although it's a little bit redundant with 2.4.6.13, I think it's important to have in there to let folks know that this is a really big issue for the post-council.
Yeah, and one of the things that we added there was if you engage in an ex parte contact, one of the sanctions that's available to the hearing examiner is to treat it as a default.
Which, yeah, it's different from the model rule.
Different from what's in the model rule.
Okay.
But I think it gives post a little bit more teeth. It's that last sentence.
Yeah, and the Administrative Procedure Act has provision in it about ex parte contact, and they're expressly prohibited by MAPA. It says may not communicate with any party or party representative in connection with any issue of fact or law in the case, except upon notice to the other parties, which makes it no longer ex parte. So the hearing officer is already governed by ex parte contact rules.
Subpoenas, again, same thing, just clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work with depositions?
What's that? You don't conduct depositions in front of the hearing examiner.
No, when you're deposed in a lawsuit, that's separate and apart from a case of somebody that we have.
When the hearing examiner is?
No.
Well, it wouldn't. It would be. The problem is when, like, you as a post council member are talking to a party on the case. If there's an ongoing civil litigation, there's not going to be a post.
It's not ex parte because they're going to know about it. If I get a notice, a subpoena to be deposed,
right.
You're going to know about it.
The rules require that the other side have notice and an opportunity to participate.
Well, and the only time that might not happen is if it's a separate civil case going on. And if that's the case, there won't be a current post-case going on because post-action will be stayed until whatever civil or criminal proceeding is done. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But they're both going on right now.
It's not inconceivable that there could be a lawsuit going on at the same time that the matter is in front of post.
Well,
but
not inconceivable.
It would be unlikely for
the
sure.
One that you're thinking of, it stayed. The post-action is stayed.
Okay.
So there's no post-case.
I think I'm John Doe number one, but I'm not. I'm pretty sure that's the way it's going to shake.
Okay. This is, again, just subpoenas and service. This is all on the model rules.
Yeah, right.
We're just adopting the model rules here.
Yeah, typo back there, R-U-E-L. I don't know if that makes any difference or not.
I'll make Chris fix it eventually.
That's a technical legal term, arguel. You got to go to law school to know what that means.
I was just Googling it.
So it's an old Norman French word.
Sounds like Southern to me, arguo.
Yeah.
Louisiana dialogue.
Yeah,
this is the ARM that we worked on after the McLeod situation, where we had a bunch of stuff that came up between the time the hearing examiner ruled and the counsel heard the case, so this was the one we worked on during after all of that. If you guys remember, I think that was in December, wasn't it? Harry? Maybe it was whenever the last.
It's October 18th.
Yeah. this is worth noting because the way it's set up right now, if we get a settlement offer from an officer, and we're in the flowchart stage, we're in the investigation stage, the director can take that, can make a stipulation with the officer without approval from the post counsel. In other words, Perry's getting rid of these cases without the post counsel ever being aware. However, once we're in the contested case hearing, there's a hearing examiner assigned, we're in the sort of formal process, then a settlement has to be approved by the post counsel. And the reason we set that up was based on historical stuff that went on with other cases, and essentially the post counsel determined that if it was something that could be resolved informally with the director, they would rather deal with it that way than have every stipulation have to come in front of the council, because the problem is if you bring the stipulation in front of the council when it's even in the investigation stage, before you've even gotten to a notice, and then
forth back.
Yeah, you end up in this sort of time loop where it just keeps
cycle.
Yeah, and it was also how much information the council has before the council formally hears the case was also the problem. So that was our way of trying to resolve and also limit how much the council has to deal with of these cases and how much the director can just deal with it. So I just wanted to bring that up to you guys because it is...
Is that something, Sarah, that, like, see there?
Yeah.
If it was accepted and the... the screening committee had been involved initially in this.
Right.
Would it be appropriate for the director to come back to the screening committee before the full council? Or are you okay with going to the full council?
The way it's set up right now, the screening committee is so far back.
Either move forward or...
Right. So your status subcommittee comes in while we're still in that sort of flow chart stage. Here, a hearing examiner has it. So the hearing examiner is kind of sitting in place of the subcommittee at that point. because the hearing examiner is impartial. And so the hearing examiner's heard both sides, has heard this settlement, and is kind of saying to the counsel, yes, this is a good resolution of this case, or no, this isn't, and why.
Okay. I'm good with that.
No, I'm not. Just so that we got this right, there is that point where the director will settle these cases. That's when the status committee
right.
will be
involved.
Yeah, and I apologize. I shouldn't have referred to C because that's already at the hearing examiner stage. But back where the director is involved,
yes.
may be appropriate.
And that was I misanswered your question
okay.
then because yes, at that point
okay.
the status subcommittee is making the decision with the director.
All right.
Because none of them are going away without that.
Yeah, we're not to the hearing examiner stage of it yet.
And that was my delineation. The reason that the other reason we weren't bringing it to the council is because we now have that subcommittee where we didn't
right.
before.
Right.
So
okay.
everybody was satisfied. You can do it with the director and the subcommittee, or the hearing examiner does it. Those are sort of the two options before the council hears it.
Okay, I have a suggestion to streamline this process, and that is to take the hearing examiner out of it. If contested case counsel. And the respondent reach a settlement, and Sarah will be consulting with Perry on that question of whether the settlement should be accepted or rejected. But if Perry and Sarah reach an agreement with the respondent to settle a contested case, it seems to me that agreement itself ought to go directly to post as opposed to being derailed or rerouted through the hearing examiner and then up to post.
Does MAPPA allow?
MAPPA doesn't talk to this issue.
Okay.
The reason I say that, though, is that the hearing examiner is there because there is a dispute as to the evidence or as to the law that needs to be resolved by an independent party because the entire council isn't going to sit and listen to all that stuff. So the hearing examiner sits and listens to it as an intermediary for the council and then makes a recommendation to the council and sends the council the record and the recommendation and lets the council deal with it from there.
But you're saying that's not necessary.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that in this situation where the respondent and Sarah and Perry agree, the hearing examiner is superfluous. He's extra. There's nothing for the hearing examiner to resolve. The responsibility as to whether to approve or disapprove lies with the council, not with the hearing examiner. And if the council disapproves the settlement, according to this, it goes back to the hearing stage. Well, what if the parties say the hearing examiner's wrong and want to take it to post anyway? Shouldn't they have that opportunity?
Which has happened in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I would suggest taking the hearing examiner out of this process and just saying that if the parties reach a resolution that disposes of all the issues in the case through negotiation, that resolution goes to the post counsel for approval or disapproval directly without the hearing examiner being involved. And the hearing gets stayed for whatever period of time is necessary to make that happen.
Certainly makes sense to me. I mean,
I think it makes a lot of sense. The only thing historically I know that it was in there because it was a check on the director and the contested case counsel mm-hmm. with having the hearing examiner there.
Right.
If we're comfortable now that...
You know, post is the check on the director.
Yeah, the council.
Right. I mean, you work for post.
Yeah.
The CIL will watch this FDL. You know how that works.
Yeah.
Council
right.
over.
So with,
council.
With your... leave, I will take the hearing examiner out of this rule and provide that it goes directly from the put the agreement into writing, signed by the respondent and contested case counsel, and then B would be present the agreement to the post counsel. I'll just take the hearing examiner out of that line, the next line down.
Yeah.
Okay. this too.
Okay, if in the course of the application, parties are able to reach the agreement, parties shall put the agreement in writing, signed by the respondent or the respondent's legal representative and the director, and B, present the agreement to the post council for acceptance or rejection. Okay.
I don't think seconded motion is needed either. I mean, all motions have to be seconded according to Robert's rules. Technically, all motions are seconded.
Okay. Okay, good. So...
And that also has the advantage of not tipping off the hearing examiner as to what the respondent would be willing to settle for.
Which was what tanked one of our other ones,
right.
I think.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why usually in settlement conferences... a district judge doesn't get involved in trying to mediate a settlement conference because the judge doesn't want to hear all that stuff going back and forth.
Awesome. I think that was really, really good. Okay. This is that they can go to Board of Crime Control. It's not really in our control. That's the statutory.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. This is all model rules. I've never had this happen, but
declaratory rulings are pretty rare.
Yeah, but if it happens, they're all straight out of model rule language.
Mm-hmm. Hey, good going. 3 pages left.
And I think they're all, you're done.
Hooray. Anybody have any lingering issues that they want to
talk about?
Anybody
want to talk about reserves or some sheriffs some more?
Yeah. Did you find anything on the firearm standards that you were looking for?
It's in the form, and I can't remember the password to get in there.
Mm-hmm. Will you get that to us?
Yeah. Okay.
And are you guys satisfied that if Truman gives us the MTO?
Yes, on the fully automatic weapon,
I think
it would be
appropriate, to... sync it up with the accepted standard.
So where we have a minimum of point blank to 10 yards right now, put in whatever the corresponding.
And Sarah, then you'll give us a final draft of this, and I'll push it out to everybody.
Well,
I will give you. Sarah will give what she's got to me.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the form of a rulemaking notice, and then I'll get it to you.
Can we go with this draft right now? Can we put it out to the rest of the council in this format right now?
We could, but I think it might be more helpful for you to wait until it's in notice of rulemaking because there's more they're going to want to look at than that. Because remember I was talking about those explanations and things? I think if we're going to use their energy, having it to look over those as well would be helpful.
Right, because we want to, after the next meeting, be able to take the next step and put this out. For public comment.
So our next meeting is May 8th, so how soon can we have that in their hands?
I can get it to you by the end of the month.
By the end of March?
By the end of March, yeah. I may be lying over that, but I think I can get it to you. I think I can get it to you by the end of March.
So are we satisfied now that we're going to go back to the council?
With the finished product.
Yeah, right. Are we?
I believe.
Well, that's sort of up to you, Perry, because it depends on what you want. You want this committee to look at that notice of rulemaking with all of those explanations in it before we take it back to the final council, or do you want to just send that out to the final council and have them discuss it?
Well, why don't we have this committee take a look at it?
I agree.
I think so. What
that's what
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'd like it to
go
to do a final perusal of this and then take it to the council as a second.
But that'll be a clean copy,
yeah.
Right?
Okay, yeah. So are we good to adjourn this meeting?
I believe so.
So Chris is going to de-litter on it and de-cheese at it.
Yes. Chris is going to make it legible.
Yeah.
Well,
but then also,
let's not give me too much credit. I'm a terrible practice.
Well, and the problem is when you look at the final rulemaking, it's going to look very different than it looks right now.
Yeah, it will. It's the format is completely available.
The format is crazy. The rules are all going to be out of order.
We'll conclude this meeting at this point.
He had a rules with that.